County, Mr. Maxim.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Walter Maxim on behalf of Jonathan Kaplan, Appellant, and Plaintiff. Your Honors, this matter comes on seeking review under the de novo standard of a summary judgment granted on the basis of qualified immunity to defendant appellees, who were officers of the Village of Wheaton and members of the DuPage County Major Crimes Task Force. The issues arise in a subset under the qualified immunity. The first distinct issue is whether or not, under the totality of the circumstances, the mistaken seizure of my client was reasonable and under the prudent officer standard. And secondly, whether or not the use of force was excessive under the totality of the circumstances, as to whether or not those issues should be decided by a jury rather than the district judge. The facts are laid out in the brief, and with the time I have, I'd like to just concentrate on some highlights. The first is that my client did suffer objective spinal injuries as a result of this incident. He was a totally innocent person driving his motorcycle in an area that this undercover group of officers was operating in, trying to locate someone that they had an anonymous tip on. They only knew, supposedly, that this was a, quote, yellow motorcycle. They had a general description of the individual. They knew he had, it was a hot August day, that he had tattoos. The real individual, Mr. Patak, had tattoos on his front arms. And what they did is, without knowing...
Was Patak ever caught?
I believe later on he was caught after this, very short day, I believe, after this. It boils down to the officer saying, well, this was a reasonable mistake. We misidentified him. But I respectfully submit the district court focused from a view of the officers, not a reasonable, prudent officer standard, and also cherry-picked facts and left out certain facts that I think are key, at least facts that, given the totality of circumstances, a reasonable jury could decide differently. Number one is that the officers never knew the make or model of the vehicle, albeit a motorcycle. This would be tantamount to officers jumping out of a van, knocking a driver out of a tan sedan or a brown truck or a white van or off a black bicycle. Very vague, nonspecific.
Well, yellow motorcycles aren't really that typical, though, are they?
Well, there are. I think I've got statistics that there's...
And they call it a cross rocket, which is the way you ride the motorcycle, too, which is a little different.
That may be the case. It's a narrower category, but nonetheless, it's still a vague category.
But do we have it? Do we know how common these motorcycles are in this area?
Well, I have statistics that I have cited in the lower court and in my brief from the state of Illinois.
I mean, for example, is there a dealer in these motorcycles in the general area?
Well, there is. My client tried to get his repaired; he couldn't. But the point I'm making is that there are millions of these types of cycles in the United States, and a quarter million in Illinois.
And in the area where the arrest occurred. So I'm just curious how common they are.
Well, that's correct. But then on the other side, there are, if we were talking about a color and a general type like a sedan, there are small little mini sedans, and there are big Toyotas, and there are big Cadillacs. But we're talking here only about category of vehicle, nothing specific in terms of make or model. And I think that across the way goes to whether or not a jury could say that was not prudent to simply knock someone off their cycle. Secondly, with respect to the manner in which they approached this, they had time to make a call from their van to their office to discuss the circumstances with their superior, their commander. But they never checked the license plates. They only knew that supposedly this individual may have been driving this type of cycle in this area. My client wasn't at this hotel. He wasn't in the parking lot. He was driving down the street coming from his place of business. Totally innocent and mistaken and injured for life. This, one way I got into law school and I got interested in law was the equitable maxims. And one, of course, the equitable maxims is for every wrong there's a remedy. Now, in this situation, obviously, qualified immunity has this broad application that can deprive a citizen of a right where there is a wrong, where there has been a serious injury. But I submit to the court...
Well, the injury wasn't reported until 2 years after the accident.
Well, he had the problems, he had the back pain, but the problem is he lost his job, lost his medical insurance, and because he was because of his injury, this, as back injuries do, they get worse and worse, and finally when he couldn't tolerate it anymore, he went for additional injury and an MRI and so on. That's what they point to, but nevertheless, that's only a question perhaps of degree, not of injury. These particular officers also... They say this man was so dangerous that we didn't draw our weapons. Now, that's sort of a little odd, because if he's so dangerous, why wouldn't you draw your weapons? My client said they, one of them did draw a weapon, but that's not the key issue. The key issue...
The attack has said he'd never be taken by the police, right? So
that's correct.
They didn't want to advertise their presence or their identity.
That's correct. But there is this factor. They hatched a plan based on insufficient information, I submit a half-baked plan, to leap. They're wearing bear shirts, Harley, et cetera, T-shirts. They leap out of an unmarked van with this innocent citizen, knock him to the ground.
You know, it's not as if they did this casually, because they were afraid of Patak. So they must have been strongly convinced it was Patak.
Well, they had some possible doubt. They say they looked like him, but they did call in because of the doubts, because they wanted to get a go-ahead. They didn't want to take responsibility themselves. They wanted to get an order from on high from an officer who wasn't there. And when they made their move, it wasn't as if they couldn't, having their weapons, gotten out. His hands are on a motorcycle. One of the officers said they saw that he was unarmed. It was their chance. He was unarmed. They could have seen, it's a hot August day, wearing a T-shirt. He had no tattoos. The other, real gentleman had tattoos. They went ahead, and instead of getting out and say, put up your hands, we're officers, show the badge, three officers, which were there from different perspectives, could have said, get down on your knees, raise your hands, put cuffs on them. They didn't do that. They say they didn't pull their guns. How dangerous could they have perceived it to be? What they did was they rushed him, knocked him to the ground, and then... put her knee in his back to the point that it caused enough crushing force to arguably that a jury could find that it was overly unneeded. They could have simply done a normal protocol and said, here's our weapons, we're police officers, you're under arrest, put your hands up. They didn't do that. They totally leaped and had this roll of the dice mentality where they leaped and on a hunch, they weren't clear, on a hunch, they gambled the safety of the public and an individual. And I think this case really is the place this has to be decided is before a jury, because the question of public policy in terms of safety and the totality of facts should lie in the citizens, 12 citizens deciding this, rather than the district judge, who I believe, all respect, sanitized the facts to conclude and to dispense with the likelihood that a jury could see otherwise.
Counsel, let me ask you...
I wanted to save my time. I'm short here. So I do want to know
about what happened to the city of Wheaton.
The city of Wheaton is still in the case. The DuPage County, we dismissed out voluntarily, along with the sheriff. So the officers that actually accosted my client are in the case, along with the city.
But Judge Leinenweber's order only dealt with the individual defendants, right?
My understanding is he granted their summary judgment. Summary judgment was brought on behalf of all the defendants.
It was all defendants?
Yes. I believe what I want to get to is this court...
I wanted to reserve your time.
Okay.
After
what
did
time
you
do that? I have? Do I have about 4 minutes? 1 minute? Okay.
A couple of minutes. Mr. Knippen?
May it please the court, my name is Jim Knippen, and I represent the city of Wheaton and the police officers in this case.
Is that your recollection as well? The city of Wheaton is in the still in the case?
Yes, Your Honor. The city of Wheaton is, but I believe that if the police officers of the city of Wheaton under the circumstances are found to have qualified immunity, there is no liability on the part of the city. There have been, I believe, no Monell standards that are satisfied in this case. I'm sorry, Judge.
There was no Monell claim?
There may be a Monell claim that is buried in the complaint. I don't read it that way, but I don't believe, at least at this juncture, there's any evidence to that effect whatsoever. And I believe that Judge Leinenweber, based upon the facts and the circumstances and the qualified immunity standards that have been set by this Court as well as the Illinois Supreme Court, concluded that because the police officers would have been immune from liability, there would be no municipal liability. If the standards have been satisfied, in other words, if you have a valid arrest warrant and there's probable cause for the warrant, and the police officers act reasonably at the time that they execute the arrest warrant, that satisfies the first prong of the issue. Has there been a reasonable arrest? At that point, if the answer to that question is yes, my understanding this Court's law as well as Supreme Court law would indicate that then, for purposes of the second analysis, which is the unlawful excessive use of force analysis, Mr. Catland at that point becomes Mr. Petek. And I believe Judge Leinenweber found that under that circumstance, qualified immunity was
Did you offer him a settlement?
Judge, there were settlement discussions. This was subject to mandatory mediation. And I will say this. Any time a innocent person is arrested, it is unfortunate. In this case,
any
though, Judge.
Anytime an innocent person is arrested and is injured, there ought to be compensation, it seems to me. Don't you think?
No, I do not, Judge.
Ridiculous. I mean, really.
Based upon the standards of law that have been articulated by this Court, Judge.
No, just as a matter of, you know, public relations, relations with the community, trying to head off lawsuits. Even if your mistake is perfectly innocent, you did injure an innocent person. I would think there ought to be compensation. I mean, not as a matter of law, just as a matter of, you know.
Money was offered, Your Honor, and it was rejected.
Pardon?
Money was offered in the mediation, and it was rejected.
That's fine. I don't draw any inference from settlement negotiation or anything like that. I'm just wondering whether, as a sort of general matter, even if you were utterly and correctly convinced that you have no liability to a person because it was a perfectly reasonable mistake, if the victim of the mistake is entirely innocent person, didn't provoke it by doing something strange, I would think you'd want to compensate them. I would think the government would want to compensate people like that.
Your Honor,
otherwise, it creates terrible ill will toward the police.
Money was offered and it was rejected, Judge, and that's all I can say at this point. Obviously, the plaintiff felt that the money that was offered was inadequate. Obviously, the city thought that based upon the totality of the circumstances and the existing case law and the facts of this case, the money was reasonable and justified.
So what about the reasonableness of it?
The arrest aspect of it, Judge?
Wouldn't it have made sense for them at least to show a badge or something, or say police when they actually grabbed him?
In actuality, Judge, there's a dispute in the testimony regarding that, but we've relied on the plaintiff's testimony in that regard. So as it confronts the court, it's the plaintiff's testimony.
I understand. So we don't know what the real facts are. But suppose they didn't say anything. Wouldn't it be prudent in a situation? I understand why they don't want to, you know, alert him to the fact that they're police, because maybe he has particular animosity toward police as opposed to mere, you know, muggers. But when they actually grab him, shouldn't they at that point identify themselves as police?
Judge, I think the courts have indicated that the preference is that they should identify them as police. Look at the circumstances of this particular case, though, and let's presume for purposes of argument that they didn't do it in this case, although there is some dispute on that with regard to the record. But let's assume that they didn't. Are there circumstances in this case that would have justified it? I think in questioning Mr. Maxim, you've identified some of those circumstances. And there are photographs of this so-called crotch rocket in the file, so I think you can take a look at it, and you can see they're appended to the motion for summary judgment as Catlin's Exhibits 1, 2, and 3. This is one of those very high-speed racing motorcycles that are in an area where the motorcycle would have very quick access to I-88. They're in front of the motorcycle at the time. Their belief of Mr. Petek, once probable cause is established, is, and it's unquestionable on this record, he is a parolee. He is a Class X felon. He is reported to have an automatic handgun.
No, that's not my question. I'm not questioning the probable cause to seize to seize Catlin, but at when they seize him, why not at the moment of seizure say they're police so that he doesn't struggle with them?
I think, Judge, that it was a very quick process. They exited the vehicle, two of them, very quickly. They grabbed him quickly. They testified, and this is uncontradicted in the record, that they felt strategically that the element of surprise was important for their safety.
No, I understand, but now they grab him. Why don't they say, as soon as they grab him, why don't they say police?
They say they did.
No, I understand, but we're supposed to, you admit it, we're supposed to assume that they didn't. If they didn't, why wouldn't that make this an excessive force case?
Because, Judge, excessive force based upon what they believed to be Mr. Petak was not exercised in this case. The issue in this case is whether or not police officers have the ability and whether this force was reasonable based upon Mr. Petak's profile. And I believe based upon the totality of the circumstances, it clearly was.
When did this injury become... Did the city learn of this injury to this fellow?
Judge, I can't answer that question right off the top of my head. I don't recall whether it was identified as actual bulging discs in the original response to written discovery. There was some delay in medical treatment and care in this case, so I don't know whether that became apparent in the written discovery or whether it came out in Mr. Catlin's deposition, which was taken sometime later.
Was there any follow-up or contact with the plaintiff in this case before the lawsuit was filed?
Yes, there was.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Knippen.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Maxim, how much time does he have? 1 minute? I'll give you 2 minutes. We'll give you 2 minutes. You can't do much in 1 minute.
I take what I get, Your Honor. My good old friend, Mr. Knippen here, mentioned, and he really hung this this fact in front of the trial judge about this possible escape down close I-88, and this man was going to get away. But what happened is these officers got on their phone. They didn't call the state police and say, seal off a section or this someone's coming this way. I mean, I-88 is patrolled by all kinds of state police. No, they stopped, blocked traffic, called their superior, said, we think we have. Should we dot out? Then they went ahead and did it. And they just winked at each other and jumped out of the car and went after him.
I don't think a roadblock on I-88 would be a very satisfactory alternative.
Well, but the point is they could have alerted the state police if he's going on there.
Chasing a motorcycle on a busy highway, that's very dangerous.
But they jumped out in the middle of mothers and children in a shopping area and attacking this man and knocking him over and then pulling out their guns. This was broad daylight in a shopping center area. So I just want to say that I think that's a red herring about a tollway being nearby. The next thing I wanted to mention was the fact that the cases that...
What road did this occur on?
This occurred on a, I guess you call it a frontage road that leads to... I forgot the name of the street, but it's the main thoroughfare. It was on near an S-curve that goes to a thoroughfare that then goes to a ramp that then goes to the tollway. With respect to this, I just wanted to ask the court to take a look at its own determinations in these kinds of cases and the standard you've set forth. And the standard, as I understand it, is twofold. One is the general Celotex standard of the Supreme Court that you, of course, follow, which is the fact that all of the facts have to be viewed in light of the plaintiff. I think that's key here. And secondly, the fact that constantly and most recently in the Washington and other cases, you've said that even if the claim is dubious, even if there's some difficulty with it, these are mixed questions of law and fact that need to be sorted out. And if they should be sorted out, it shouldn't be for this court to ultimately decide it or for the trial court, with all respect. It should be for a jury. And I think in particular in this case, given what Your Honor said, in terms of an honest citizen, law-abiding citizen, having this befall him, it is for a jury to speak to as to whether or not this was reasonable or unreasonable. And the standard, if you notice, every time Mr. Knippen spoke, his officers thought it was reasonable. That's not the standard. The standard this court is, and the court's repeatedly said it, it's a prudent officer standard as to what a prudent officer would, and I don't believe a prudent officer would have acted in this way, and a jury could find that it was done imprudently and that they could be enrolled in my point of view and make a determination for this plaintiff. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Maxim and Mr. Knipper. So we'll move to